Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Our Favorite Things.
Huzzah!
Huzzah! Oh, you and your royal proclamations.
Well, you know why I have royal proclamations? Because I went to the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair.
You did what?
Sutton and I have gone now 2 years in a row to the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair. Now, Rob, I'm serious. This is a place you go, and Sutton gets fully dressed up. I do not. I'm like embarrassed that I don't get dressed up. That's how intense it is. But when you go and you like are there, everyone's like, "Good morrow, fare thee well, pray thee, what speakest thou todayeth?" Like they love to speak in like the Ren Fair,
holy
you know,
shitteth
jargon. And I just kind of go along for the ride, and it's fun. But I do like to say things like "Huzzah! The king arriveth!" And the king totally called me out because Sutton was like bowing to him when he was walking off set with his, because they literally walk around with like an entourage and they act like he is the king, King Henry, you know. And so, and he was like,
"Your Highness," and I, didn't no, I see you yesterday no, working so, at Duane Reade's?
Seriously, but he was like, Sutton's like bowing to him, and I'm like, "Oh, honey," and he's like, he goes to me, look, because they're all actors. He looks right at me. He's like, "There's no fourth wall here." And he totally called me out.
Jeez, King.
And then when in front of everyone during the jousting, the royal jousting, because they have full-on jousting, and a whole crowd is there. They're all presented to the king. And I go, "God save the king." And he's like, "Oh, you're catching on." Like,
Oh, my God.
It was very funny. But like, I have to say, these actors who, I mean, they only do it on the weekends. They live there. But I don't know what their life is like during the week.
It's amazing.
But it was, I have to say, they're always all in. They are always improvising the entire time.
I love it.
They are having a good time, and they are. And listen, I'm sure there's listeners out there who have gone to a Ren Fair. I grew up going to them when I was a kid. We never got dressed up. Well, now I'm a little like, I'm kind of digging it. I'm kind of into it.
I have to ask, do you have a couple of drinks in you before you go?
During the whole time? Are you
really?
Kidding me? Oh, well, so the one in Pennsylvania, it's about a 3-hour drive. Because I know there's one 45 minutes right outside New York here. But we go to the one in Pennsylvania. It's on a vineyard and a brewery. So they have
perfect.
So you have like a cup and you just like booze and cruise the whole time. It's awesome.
That's really perfect.
But it's really beautifully well done. You really feel like it's like, it feels like Disney World in a way, because everything's about the details, and it's a permanent place. So there's all these buildings there, and it's cool, and they have shows, live entertainment. In fact, there's this guy that does a whip thing, Don Juan and Miguel, like these two guys. They've been doing it for so long that I saw them when I was 12, and I'm 36, and so that's how long they've been doing it.
And they still do it.
Oh yeah, they make a living doing it. We bought their DVD, which is good, but slightly sad.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, when you see Don Juan, like, you know, packing up his stuff, and this is like this, like, 58-year-old man, like, you're like, wow, that's good job.
You know, Don Juan and Miguel, there were no cameras in the Renaissance, so.
Well, yes.
What is it, like oil portraits, and you just, like, flip through it, and it's.
Like, really fast. Really so it looks fast. Like a cartoon.
Look at Don and Miguel.
Now,
They're 97 years old, but God bless them.
You have to respect and honor that they've managed to, and they travel all over the country,
Don
by the
can
way.
Whip Miguel's
they,
walker.
But they does. He'll put, Miguel puts like a, you know, like a matchstick in his mouth, and he whips it out. I mean, like,
that is incredible.
It is amazing, and they've made a living doing this for the last, you know, umpteen years.
Do you think if you were living in the Renaissance, you would be surviving?
Yeah, we'd be entertainers. We'd be court jesters.
Would we really?
I think we would be.
Could I wear the hat with the bells?
Oh, I'd love to see you in that.
Well, come over tomorrow. I've already ordered mine from
Etsy. You can call it your unit.
My unit. That's a throwback to a few other episodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could totally do that. Wow.
How are you doing? Huzzah.
Huzzah. Great. I kind of want to go with you guys now to a Renaissance fair.
We'll bring you and Daniel. It'll be fun.
Oh, my God. He would love that. He would love that.
I like that you said he would love that. Would you? I don't know.
Oh, I'm going too.
Okay, good.
I thought I'd just drop the kids off and then go see a movie or something. You can call me when you're ready to get picked up from the mall. Huzzah!
Oh, gosh.
My children wanteth me to pick them up. Huzzah! Oh, my God. I'd be drinking. Okay, so first of all, speaking of huzzah, a big thank you to some of our listeners who are responding again in droves with what their hashtag skip song is. So once again, as Kevin said a couple of weeks ago, hashtag skip song does not mean that the song is bad. It doesn't mean
that
writing is bad.
We love the songs. We love all show tunes. We are just sometimes we like others more than others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll throw out a couple of things. You might remember our previous guest, Brian Hobgood, who came on and talked about the Tony Awards with us. Brian said, I could do a 90-minute podcast about this alone. Where to even begin? Good buddy Will Thomason said Spring Awakening, and then there were none. He said, because it's awesome in the show, just not on the morning commute.
Oh.
So there's a reason why we skipped the song.
Yeah, totally. My mother, when we were talking, I was talking to my mother about this, and this kills me. I was like, we were talking about skip songs, and my mom immediately, she's like, oh, when I listen to Little Night Music, ugh, always, always Liaisons. And that's nothing against Angela, but she doesn't do it. A lot of people don't love the Liaisons, though, I have to say.
A lot of people.
I'm not surprised by that,
yeah,
to be honest.
A lot of people aren't fans of Liaisons. Stephen Carl McCasland is doing some great stuff over at Feinstein's 54 Below. A Man's Gotta Do from Bright Star.
You know what? I can actually, I understand. I love Bright Star.
Me too.
I love Bright Star. It's like one of the best recordings I've heard in a long time. But that's a song that I can understand skipping.
Our good buddy Casey Graham, who he's doing double duty. Casey's the associate director on the tours of Dirty Dancing and Phantom of the Opera.
My goodness, Casey.
Don't get those two shows mixed
Cheapers.
Up. Nobody puts Christine in a corner. It's very odd at the end where Christine runs and the Phantom lifts her up and twirls her around.
That was good.
He did The Bottom Line from Newsies and Let Love Grow from 9 to 5.
Oh, yes. On Twitter, we had this one I got to agree with, and we've had a lot of people come in. Becca Anderson and Sydney Stoper from on Twitter, they both said Contact from Rent. And I got to say, yeah, you guys know that one where they're like, I can't even remember. They're like, they say all the words and they're all like throwing themselves against the grate. And then, and then you find out Angel's dead and then you're like, that sucks.
That sucks. Right?
Yeah. And then they get to like the greatest song in it, which is Without You, right? They go
You like Without You? Yeah.
When I first saw Rent and I was like a teenager, maybe I was like 20 or something, I was the first time I ever saw that sequence where, because remember there were three tables.
Yeah.
And when they each pick
something.
Sobbing, like just crying my eyes out. Yeah.
They got me on One Sung Glory right at the beginning.
Oh, really?
Those first opening chords.
Oh, wow.
I was like, this is going to be something so special. At Ricky Kondo's Say No to This from Hamilton.
Oh,
we had a Hamilton
wow.
Say No
Sacrilege.
To This Ricky Kondos. But good for you, Ricky. You stand strong. Tim McDonald says My House from Matilda simply because Miss Honey is the worst.
My House.
Oh, my God. We'll send some more your way. But you guys
make
are doing,
me laugh.
You guys are doing so good with some of these. I love them so much. Oh, my favorite, though.
Oh, God, what?
This actor's name is David Grosha. David Grosha said from The Little Mermaid, Les Poissons, which is ironic because I saw David in this production this summer, and he played the chef. So he did not. So I don't know if it's
he got real over that song fast.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh, that's
so
good stuff.
They keep sending them our way. We're so happy you have these. And we're going to send some favorite things your way right now. Some more obscure shows or websites or books.
That's right.
Who shall go first? Who won the coin toss?
Oh, I don't know. I'll go first.
You going to go first?
Yeah.
KDT for the win.
So one of my favorite things is this. It's not really the show. It's a recording of what was thought to be a long lost show. Mm. You know, PS Classics is a recording. I wouldn't say company. I mean, they're a non for profit group. Tommy Krasker and Philip Chaffin. They oftentimes will record shows that need to be heard again. Like Girl Crazy, I think they released that. But this is a show in honor of Hillary Clinton being ostensibly could be our first female president. This was written by a woman who some thought this was the first score, a book musical that was written by a woman. Turns out it really technically isn't. There was someone before her, but she's often, people think that this is the first one. Let's just say this is the first really good one. And she wrote the score to this.
It's a woman who wrote a score.
Yep, in 1930. And she wrote the score to this with her husband. On top of it all, she had an over 10-year love affair with George Gershwin, who encouraged her to write this musical with her husband to help. So her grandchild said, some people have a child to stay together. Well, they wrote a musical. They didn't stay together.
Is it Dorothy Fields?
No, I wish it was. No.
Oh, my gosh.
Her name is Kay Swift. And Kay Swift wrote Fine and Dandy.
Oh, my God.
I know. Here we go. So that's the name. Kevin. That's the name of the musical. The musical was called Fine and Dandy, which she wrote with her husband, Paul James. That's a nom de plume. His name is something else, but he was a banker. And that wasn't considered kosher to be writing a musical if you're a banker. The crazy thing about all of this is that they were filthy rich. They were in their young. They met when she was like a piano player at a party, and he met her at like 17. And they like hit it off. So they like got together and they got married and they had three kids. And they were filthy rich, like just they were young, so they would like have parties in the roaring 20s and like, you know, blah blah blah. Well, she always played the piano. She was a classically trained pianist and she was a very good piano player. Well, invited to one of the parties is one George Gershwin, who was a famous bachelor. Like, he was very much a playa and he had a lot of fun at the time because he was so talented, but also a bachelor. Well, they fall in love at one of these parties. Well, he recognizes her talent. And he's like, oh my gosh, like, you should write a musical. Well, her marriage wasn't doing so well. And he's like, hey, your husband used to write poetry. You guys should write a musical together. So George Gershwin encourages her to write this musical called Fine and Dandy. And it was very much of its era. So it was like, a book musical. Yes, there was a loose plot. I couldn't even tell you what the plot is right now, but there was a comedian in it. And so a lot of sketches that he did, but the songs are actually shockingly amazing. She was a very good songwriter.
Like, what are some of the songs? That we
so in this it? Album, so in this album, the song is Fine and Dandy is one of the big ones, but let me just say that in 2004, PS Classics found, you know, they acquired this score. Someone sent it to them and they were like, oh, okay, all right, we'll listen to it. And they were like, oh my gosh, this is pretty good. This is really good. So they got Carly Carmelo, they got Mark Lynn Baker, they got Gavin Creel, they got Andrea Burns, they got Mario Cantoni, they got a bunch of people to record the songs. They had it reorchestrated because all of Hans Bialik, he's a great old musician for the 20s and 30s and did a lot of great charts and scores over the orchestrations, they're all gone. So they had to hire Larry Moore, whom we interviewed a couple weeks back. He was an orchestrator that they he's very good at reproducing it. They had Larry Moore do it with a guy named Aaron Grady. And then this other man named Russell Warner worked with Kay Swift, who lived to be like 96 or something.
Yeah. I remember that she lived.
Oh yeah. She
life.
Lived all the way up to the 90s. She was born in like 1897, I want to say. And she lived to like 1993 or so. I have it written down here somewhere. But so this gentleman worked with her to try to remember what her old melodies were. And so they have this, some of the songs you might want to listen to. I love the song that Gavin Creel sings called Starting at the Bottom. Really sweet song. They're catchy. They're toe tapping songs.
Yeah.
Andrea Burns sings I Met a New High. Let's go eat worms in the garden, which sounds silly, but when you hear it, you're kind of like, hey, that's kind of fun. I like these. It's very much in the style of like Gershwin shows, yeah. Like Girl Crazy. And then, so the interesting thing is you can see the influence that Gershwin had on Kay Swift. Kay Swift never really wrote another big musical after this. She wrote one show in 1950 called Paris 90 or something like that.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
like a Otis Skinner thing. But she never really wrote a big musical, but she did. She divorced in like a couple years after this came out, like 1934. Still stayed close with Gershwin. Still had this thing. It makes you wonder: perhaps she had an influence on him? Because he famously would get inspiration from other writers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Porgy and Bess and all of that. I mean, he would go uptown to listen to some of the musicians in Harlem and then be like, oh, well, I'm going to use that. So I've read an article that was basically saying that maybe she had a bigger influence than people think because she was such a strong musician. So yeah, so PS Classics released this album, I don't know, I think it's really cool that this, in a time when only men did music and created scores, that and here is this, and she wasn't just like some lady who like needed to work, like they were very well off. Gershwin got her a job in 1927 for a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Yeah.
So he got her the job as a rehearsal pianist for that.
Oh,
so you can
wow.
imagine this woman like in her like furs going down to like this, you know, to rehearse and like be the rehearsal pianist for this show.
It sounds like there's a movie,
right? Fascinating, huh? And I'm sure
rhythm.
but this the whole story, what's interesting is that every article I read is always about her, her husband, and Gershwin. And this sort of like weird, and they all went to the same therapist. Not at the same time, but they all were on the same couch at different times.
So, that therapist had some-
he was like a famous therapist. I forget who it was, but yeah, no, there's definitely something there. But what I like about it is that this score, yes, it is of its time, and yes, you definitely hear that these are sweet little tunes. But when I first heard it, and I was like 23, 24, I couldn't stop listening to it. I really was captivated by the singing and the style of it, and it's fun. It's just a nice old throwback. So if you like, you know, fascinating rhythm and, you know, embraceable you and those kinds of things, you're gonna like this kind of score. So.
Fantastic.
They're nice old standards.
Fine and dandy.
Fine and dandy.
Oh, my God. Well, I want to go listen to it.
And the album is great because they have there's all these articles in it. There's all these essays written by so many people about them, about this, you know, how it was made and all this, that. It's nice. It's a nice little piece. It's like a little historical nugget.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And what a good cast, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Mine is also...
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Very much of its time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel in a lot of ways, like what you were saying, mm-hmm. is the story behind the show is actually might be more interesting than the show itself.
Okay.
1956.
Oh.
1956. Big musical comedy star making her return back to the Broadway after 4 years away.
4 years away.
Against her will.
Oh,
she doesn't want to do it to begin with.
Really?
But she has to.
It's not Bells Are Ringing.
It's not Bells Are Ringing. Same year, though.
Yeah.
Bells Are Ringing comes out in the same year.
I'm like drawing a blank on what else came out that year.
Ethel Merman.
Happy Hunting.
Happy Hunting.
Oh, yeah. Famous, like...
Happy Hunting.
What are they... Like, there's like... They're like, what is that famous... You're probably going to tell us the famous
the
quote.
The quote, we got a couple of famous quotes from this one.
I don't want to ruin it.
For those of you who don't know, Happy Hunting is a 1956 musical. Book is by Lindsay and Krause,
mm-hmm.
do Sound of Music. The score is by Matt Doobie and Harold Carr.
Not exactly a household name.
Not
a reason.
It's pretty much it. Their score. Although I will say this, the score to Happy Hunting, I feel it's very breezy, very charming, very much 1950s of its period, with some really good songs in it, including Gee, But It's Good to Be Here.
That's Gee, But It's Gonna Be Here.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally. Her big like Ethel Merman like Here I Come song.
Yeah.
Mutual Admiration Society.
Mm.
Which is, if you heard it, you'd be like, yeah, I totally know it. This is what I call love. There's a lot of good material in here.
Right.
The book is not good. I'll tell you the plot very quickly.
Oh, good.
Then we'll talk about all the backstage stuff that happened on this.
And they were like, if you
production.
Can't write Ethel Merman, oh, is that what?
No, go ahead. You go
but
ahead.
But I always thought the famous quote was like, if you can't write Ethel Merman a show-stopping number, then you got a problem. And they
Absolutely.
Were like, they didn't have one.
They did not have one.
But I don't know the story, actually.
So the plot is, it's making fun of a big historical event at the time. A couple of years prior to the musical opening, Grace Kelly married... the Prince Rainier of Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was like the big news story. So what happens is in the show, Ethel Merman plays Liz Livingstone, and she has a daughter named Beth, and they arrive in Monaco for the wedding of Princess Grace, or Grace and the Prince Rainier. And
so they actually use the historical names. They actually use them.
Oh, yeah, there wasn't like, oh, you know, this is
like Princess,
Princess Trace.
Yeah,
and,
I don't know.
You know, and Prince Reindeer of Conoco. No, they don't do that. They actually, they were playing up exactly on the historical significance of it. And they don't have an invitation to the wedding. And so Ethel Merman gets pissed and she goes, well, to hell with that. I'm going to get my daughter married to a prince and it's going to be 10 times bigger than your wedding, Grace Kelly. And that's honestly the plot of Happy Hunting.
Wow.
So what happens is she finds a prince. Mm-hmm. The prince is this like disposed Spanish prince played by Fernando Lamas.
Oh,
the sexy suave Fernando Lamas.
Fernando Lamas.
And what happens is Ethel Merman realizes she's actually in love with Fernando Lamas, and the daughter's cool with that because the daughter's in love with somebody else. So it's just one of those like really silly golden age musicals where everything works out happily in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as big as Annie Get Your Gun. It's not as big as Gypsy. It's not as big as anything. This was a very, very small blip in the radar for her. It doesn't mean that she's not brilliant on the cast recording. Now, what happens offstage is 10 times more
interesting. I like it where we're going now.
So, Ethel Merman.
Because you know I love some Ethel Merman stories.
Oh, here we go. So Ethel Merman was like, she got married to this guy, and his name was Bob Six. That was literally his name, Bob Six.
Yes.
Right? And he was an executive with Continental Airlines.
You know what's crazy? I listened to this podcast called The Mystery Show.
Okay.
And it's a great like NPR type thing, and where this person goes on this journey to like find, you know, like the answer to these mysteries. And one of them is a belt buckle. And the answer to it is Bob Six.
Oh my God.
Because the belt buckle is inscribed with his name. And so they find out that he was this famous Continental guy. And it was ultimately about the chef that had the belt buckle.
Incredible.
So yeah. So anyway, that was, I just can't believe that the name is coming up again. And I just listened to this
podcast. Welcome back, Bob Six. So Bob Six was
he was a very uppity muck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marries Ethel Merman. And Ethel Merman goes, thank God. Like, no more Broadway shows.
Right.
We're going to be married. We're going to have kids. And I'm going to get off the road. And all I'm going to do is I'm going to move with him to Denver.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be a housewife. So after like a couple of months of that, he goes, why are you here? Like, why are you at home?
Because he was like, I thought I was just going to be free and like married.
No, what he really wanted, you found out, was he thought that by putting her out in the spotlight and being attached to her, it would promote Continental Airlines.
So
he was using her.
Oh.
And he's like, well, you need to do a show.
Oh, my God.
And she was like, I don't want to do a show. I want to be a housewife. And he goes, you're going to do a show. You're going to New York City. And so the first thing they came across was this Happy Hunting show. And so
clearly the first thing they came across.
She begrudgingly goes in and says, fine, I'll do Happy Hunting if that'll make you happy. On like the second day of rehearsal, the composer gives her a vocal note because she was adding like a vocalization that he didn't like. And he goes, you can't do that.
Can't imagine.
And she nodded and she called over the director and she points to the composer and she goes, they will never speak to me again. And the composer lyricist never communicated with her for the entire run. God. But the real story, the stories you probably know, are with Fernando Lamas. So Fernando Lamas was this like Latin lover. He was a matinee idol that all the women loved.
Suave and
sexy. And he's going to be the love interest opposite Ethel Merman.
Yeah.
They did not get along.
No.
Because this was really bizarre to me. He went on a television show. He went on the Mike Wallace show. And Mike Wallace asked him, he goes, so what's it like working with Ethel Merman? And he said, kissing her is like kissing your uncle in a Sherman tank.
Oh, my gosh.
Like,
that's so specific. So,
and rude.
I know.
Specific,
it's horrible.
And rude.
Oh, my
specific
God. And the
rude.
Show is running?
They were running.
Oh, my
And they were
gosh.
Like, what's it like kissing Ethel Merman? He's like, it's like kissing a Sherman tank and your uncle. And I'm like, what an asshole. Now, here's a really interesting story. People said that he was trying to get out of his contract with her because he was up for the lead role in the South Pacific movie. And they thought that maybe some of this bad behavior was like, she'll hate me so much, she'll release me. She knew this. And when he came time to say, I want to go do the South Pacific movie, she was like, nope, not getting released from your contract. Sorry. And so
was South Pacific or Sound of Music? South Pacific.
South Pacific.
South Pacific. Wow.
So there's offstage tensions seem more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, if you read it, it's so silly. There's a horse. Ethel Merman literally plays
The album cover, she's riding a horse, isn't
she? Yeah, but they actually brought a live horse on stage, and she did a scene. Yeah, so one of her last scene partners was a horse.
Oh,
and I cannot
Ethel.
Believe this. I actually have seen a production of Happy Hunting in my life.
No way.
Yes, there was an all-girls school next to where I grew up. They did Happy Hunting, and they couldn't bring a horse on stage.
Uh-huh.
So they literally...
A rabbit.
No, they filmed a horse, And the actress that played the Ethel Merman role looked at the projection screen and would talk, and then you would see the little play triangle come
up,
and
my
the horse would
goodness.
Like move its head.
You know
and
what?
Then it would go back.
Bless that teacher for being like, let's do happy hunting.
Oh, I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
bless
good
you.
For you,
good for
sir
you.
Or madam. Like,
I, good for you.
You know, like, what's it going to be next year?
Next year
grass
is...
Grass harp? I don't know.
Next year's plain and fancy.
I mean, seriously.
That's a
hats off to any... Hats off to all the theater teachers out there.
Absolutely.
You know?
Working against...
Make a difference.
Hoping against hope.
Seriously.
Doing such
doing
good
happy
shows.
Hunting.
Jeez. So please take a listen to Happy Hunting and take a listen to...
Fine and Dandy.
We will see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Adios.
These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.